أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. أشهد أن محمد.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Islam in Focus. This is the 48th in the series Sources of Islam, and it is the 8th on the arrangement of the Quran. As our viewers will remember, we have been discussing over the last few programs arrangements within the Quran, specifically the connections between the different chapters and how they relate and interrelate. And it's important to note that this is one area which is not very well published in Islamic literature. And certain things that we've been discussing over the last several weeks is actually not published at all. And for this, we're quite indebted to Dr. Jamal Bedawi for his review of the research done in this field, and to a certain extent, the research he's also done on his own initiative. So at this time, I welcome once again Dr. Jamal Bedawi from St. Mary's University. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal.
Alaikum salam.
Overall, it's, as I've just mentioned, this is an area which really demands more attention than the Islamic world has actually given. And we have been reviewing this topic, particularly with the aid of those very clear charts that you've made out. Maybe we can continue from where we left off last week, if that's okay with you.
Okay, no problem at all. And if you recall, last week we ended with chapter 60, and we said that the ending of chapter 60 deals with the attitudes of unbelievers and how the believer should not make alliance with them. The beginning of chapter 67, which is sorry, 61, which is the first one in our new chart here today, seemed to be also dealing with deviations that some unbelievers also have fallen into. So there's some continuity also, in particular saying something that one does not do, and talks also about the Prophet Moses and how he was hurt by his people. That's in the beginning of 61. 61 ends by talking about acceptance of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, telling people that this is the best dealing that they can make, to believe in Allah and his messenger. So it talks about the Prophet. Okay? You notice that in the beginning of 62, it also talks about the Prophet being sent particularly to the people who have been unlettered. So both of them continue about the Prophet. 62 ends by talking about one of the human weaknesses, and that was in particular reference to a situation where Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was giving the sermon on Friday during the prayer, and a caravan came and people got so distracted that they left, you know, the mosque and just went out to receive the caravan. So it talks about one human weakness. In the beginning of 63, we find talking about another serious type of weakness, that is the attitude of hypocrisy, and describes the way they were dealing with the Prophet and how Allah uncovered all their plots and their plans, and he knew that they were just putting a face on things. Chapter 63 ends by reminding the believer that they should not be distracted, or no distraction, because of property or children, and that they should really spend from what Allah has given them before it is too late. At the beginning of chapter 64 deals with Allah as the owner, or the domain of Allah, of this universe, as if to tell us, don't be distracted, because everything, don't run after things, because all come from Allah, and he is the owner of the whole universe. Don't let anything distract you from him. The 64th chapter ends with indicating that having wives or children is a matter of trial. You are put to trials. Actually, the last verses of the surah say that your children and your wives are like a test for you. And by the way, the reason of revelation might throw some light on how this one connects with the following chapter, because that verse was revealed according to At-Tirmidhi and Al-Hakim with respect to some of the early Muslims who accepted Islam while they were in Mecca, and they wanted to migrate and go to Medina where the Prophet went. So their children and their wives tried to prevent them from doing so. So they might have been, and some of them at least were unbelievers and did not wish their parents or husbands to go and join the Prophet. That might indicate again why the 65th chapter begins with the regulation of divorce, which means then that if you cannot resolve these problems with those children and wives, and if it happens that there is no other solution but divorce, then you must also observe the rules for divorce, that you can't just divorce them like that. There are certain rights and responsibilities that has to be observed. The ending of that chapter 65 deals actually with some aspects of family law in Islam. That is in much in connection with the beginning of chapter 66, again, which deal with family laws, various aspects of family laws. It is interesting to notice also that both chapters 65 and 66 begin by addressing Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Ya Ayyuhan Nabi, which shows again the possible reason why they come in that particular order. Chapter 66 ends by providing a contrast between belief and unbelief, and give examples of pious women and unbelieving people and so on, which again is very much connected with the beginning of chapter 67, in which it's stated that God created life and death in order to test you, who is you, or which of you is best in deeds, which is again a contrast again between the attitude of belief and unbelief, very much continuing on the same line. Chapter 67 ends by asking a question, or it's not really exactly a question, it's a sort of exhortation addressing the unbelievers, saying you will know who is in manifest error. That is, after presenting the message to them, that wait, that there will come a time where you will realize who was in error. Of course, the reference here is obviously is either you are in error or the Prophet is in error. Chapter 68 answers that question. It says the Prophet is not in error. Ma anta bi ni'mati rabbika bi majnun. That is, you are not because of the blessing that Allah has given you and chose you, O Muhammad, to be a prophet and messenger. This is not a reason for people to accuse you of being, you know, crazy or whatever other accusation they made. That chapter 68 ends by mentioning something about the Quran, indicating that the Quran is a reminder, ذكر للعالمين, which is a sort of reminder after mentioning again the attitude of the unbelievers toward the Prophet and their antagonism. Chapter 69 begins by giving a lesson and clarifying the nature of this reminder, the Quran as a reminder, by showing how some nations before who rejected their prophets, like Thamud and Ad, the people of Thamud and Ad, have been punished in the past, as if to say, all right, you might be doing that to the Prophet, but remember that those who followed the same path in the past were punished, so heed it. That chapter 69 ends indicating or talking about the Quran and the attitude of the unbelievers or rejectors towards the Quran, and it says, وَإِنَّهُ لَحَسَّةٌ عَلَى الْكَافِرِينَ. The Quran is an anguish for the unbelievers, but it says it is though the absolute truth. Okay? Chapter 70 begins talking also about the unbelievers or rejectors of the truth, and that they will have inevitable punishment. That chapter ends, 70, with warning to the Arabs. That is, wait, the Arabs who rejected the Prophet, wait, or let them play and, you know, waste time until the day of judgment comes, and then they will come to task. And that connects with chapter 71, the beginning of 71, which is also a warning by Prophet Noah.
Well, can you clarify that connection between, you just mentioned the Prophet Noah, so between Prophet Noah and the Arabs?
What connection in terms of the warning?
Right.
Okay. It's somewhat similar to the connection between the two previous or a couple of surahs before that, because as it warns the Arabs who rejected the Prophet, it tells them that people who did not heed the warning in the past were punished, and that's why it begins with talking about how Prophet Noah was sent to his people and warned them that you should, you know, follow the truth and follow the path of God before a punishment will befall you. So like showing the fate. So again, the connection between the present, yes, or the attitude of the time of the Prophet and what happened in the past. Okay? The 71 ends by talking about the rejectors and how they are punished, which is basically the rejectors here of Prophet Noah. And by the way, let me add a little remark here, because it will help us to understand how does that connect with the beginning of chapter 72. Elsewhere in the Quran, which I suppose is somewhat familiar to our Jewish and Christian viewers, that Prophet Noah lived among his people for a substantial period of time. The Quran mentioned that he lived for 950 years with them, inviting them to the path of truth. And despite all of that, he was rejected by the majority of his people with this long time. That may help us clarify the beginning of chapter 72, which might not be apparent from the beginning, because in that beginning, it talks about how some of the jinn, J-I-N-N, which is a sort of creatures who are not visible by us human beings, but they have the power of choice between right and wrong, belief and unbelief, similar to humans in that sense, but they are not visible. And it says that those jinn or spirits have heard some verses of the Quran, just mere hearing the Prophet reciting the Quran, and they immediately believed in him and realized that this is divine revelation. As if to tell us, compare and contrast. On one hand, the attitudes of humans, the people of Noah, after 950 years of preaching, they did not believe. And here are some other creatures, the jinn. The moment they heard the message of the Quran, they responded favorably. Of course, we're not saying that all jinn are believers, but it shows a contrast in attitudes between belief and unbelief. Chapter 72 ends by indicating the importance of the divine message and the knowledge of the unseen, and how this knowledge is given by Allah only to chosen messengers, and that how these messengers are protected and guarded in order to make sure that the message, which is the key term here, the message has reached people appropriately. In the beginning of chapter 73, it talks also about the message of God, but this time specifying how that message of divine revelation and following the path of God has been given to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And actually it describes it, قَوْلًا ثَقِيلًا. It is a weighty, it's a very significant, very important message. That chapter 73 ends with the emphasis on constancy and struggle. In fact, the very last verse in that chapter indicate that the requirement of night prayers that was very strict in the early days of Islam was very heavy, you know, like staying most of the night or two-thirds or half of it in prayers. But in the last verse it says that God knows that some of you will be struggling in the path of Allah, which means that after the initial preparation of the Muslim group, after the spirituality that has been very much drilled and emphasized in terms of their love of Allah and their relationship with Him, now you can relax a little bit. You still can continue to pray and recite Quran at night, but maybe those of you who might be involved in struggle against the unbelievers may not be able to do as much prayers during the night as they used to do before. That constancy and struggle is very much connected with the beginning of chapter 74. Why? If you begin reading that chapter, it basically addresses Prophet Muhammad and says, go ahead and declare the message. And we all know historically that in the early days of Islam, the message of the Prophet and his teaching was not really totally secret, but was somewhat confined initially to his family and to his close friends and people around him. And only at one point it was revealed at the beginning of that surah that now you can go out and declare it in the open. And obviously to declare the message and in the open subjected the Prophet and his companion to all kinds of persecution and hurt, which again connects very much with the ending of chapter 73, that get ready for the struggle because now you're going to declare the message.
Right, yeah.
You see the connection? Chapter 74 ends indicating one aspect of the unbelievers, that they do not fear the hereafter. They have no fear of the hereafter. So it talks about the hereafter. Beginning of 75 describes the resurrection. And interestingly enough, it responds to people who reject the hereafter because they always ask, how could our bones after we become dust come back to life? So the beginning of that chapter 75 reminds people that those who are wondering how Allah will collect their bones after death, didn't he create even and fashion their own fingertips? And we discussed that in the scientific miracle of the Quran, that there's such, you know, very important expression here about the fingertips in terms of our fingerprints, because of the lack of similarity between two individuals with the same fingerprints. So again, the connection is beautifully, you know, related in terms of the notion of the argument and the response to that argument. 75 ends talking about resurrection, reminding us, after describing some aspect of embryology, how the one who created us initially is able to bring us to life again, that is, in the hereafter. That connects very closely with the beginning of chapter 76, which deals both with creation and human responsibility. Creation, first of all, because in the beginning it reminds the human that they were nothing before when they were created initially. That's just like a sperm or fertilized ovum, something very, very trivial, very small. And that's how Allah gave them this power. And then it says that people then would be directed with this innate nature to distinguish between good and evil, and as such they are responsible for it. That chapter 76 ends talking about the penalty, in that particular case, the penalty of the wrongdoers. And that penalty actually is in the hereafter, which is very similar again with the beginning of the 77th chapter, which also deals with the certitude that the hour is certain, it is coming, and there is no doubt about it, the hereafter and the day of judgment. 77 ends dealing with the rejectors, and actually it ends in a question form. I remember that question form because that would very much relate to the beginning of the following chapter. It says, فَبِأَيِّ حَدِيثٍ بَعْدَهُ يُؤْمِنُونَ. In what kind of speech or exhortation are they going to believe after all that? So, question directed to them. 78 begins also with a question. عَمَّا يَتَسَأَلُونَ. What are they asking about, or wondering, or arguing about the ominous day, or that is the day of judgment, the great news, or the very serious news that's going to take place, i.e. resurrection and the day of judgment? That one ends with the regrets, the feeling of deep regret on the part of the unbelievers when they really face the accountability in the hereafter, and hope that they were dust so that they not face this kind of accountability. And as such, it gives this warning, إِنَّا أَنْذَرْنَاكُمْ, we are warning you of this day, the Quran says. In the beginning of 79, it talks about regret also on the part of unbelievers, but here rather than in the hereafter, because it describes the angels of death when they take the soul of those rejectors of truth. And as the Prophet explained, and as the Quran also explained, that people actually would know their destination or destiny at the time of death, even they don't have to wait until the day of judgment, and as such this is a matter of regret for them also, that it's too late for them to believe or follow the path of God. 79 ends addressing the skeptics, and talks also about the hour, and describes how people again will be divided. People would be going to paradise, others would be going to the hellfire. So basically addressing the question of the hour and the question that arises therein. 80 begins with a sincere question, in contrast to those unbelievers and skeptics, it speaks about a very simple but profoundly faithful believer, a blind man who came to the Prophet to ask questions from him at the time when he is engaged in discussion with the nobility of Quraysh, the unbelievers. And that shows again that the value of that simple blind man is more important in the sight of God than all of this bunch of rich, powerful unbelievers. And this is a very interesting surah. The name of the person, by the way, is Abdullah ibn Umm Maktum, so he's a known person, and that's the reason why the verse was read. So that's a contrast again with the skeptic. That chapter also ends talking about the hour. Yeah, that is when the day of judgment comes, and how everybody would be dependent very heavily on his or her own deeds.
Dr. Jamal, before you go on with chapter 81, maybe I can ask you a question here.
Sure.
Now, I've noted that the chapters seem to have an increased frequency of the topics dealing with belief and unbelief, with the hour and with reward and with punishment. Mm-hmm. Now, is there any specific reason that you know of why that may be the case?
Okay, in fact, the last 48 chapters in the Quran are largely smaller type of chapters, and they are all, these 48 chapters, from, I think it was from 67 on, 48 total, last ones, are Makki revelations that were during the persecution period. And that was the very early days of Islam, where the emphasis on belief, consequences of belief and unbelief, has been very much emphasized. I think your observation is well taken. That probably explains why that emphasis is there. That's a very good observation. Just like in a previous program, there were several chapters in succession that dealt with the basic theme of the Quran,
right,
the truthfulness of the Quran, the revelation of the Quran. So that's an interesting remark. It's a well taken point.
Okay. Sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem. In 81, you might recall, again, we said that 80 ends talking about the hours, again, to confirm what you're asking. The 81st chapter begins with the hour also. It is Shamsukura describing the scenes when the hour begins. It ends talking about the Quran as reminder or message to all, that is to all human beings. 82 begins also with the hour and accountability, because the message basically is to remind us of that hour and to get ready for it, to get ready to give our account of the life that we lived on this earth. 82 ends indicating that the wicked will have no helpers in the day of judgment, that no person can benefit any other person. So that's especially a warning to the wicked. Okay? 83 begins talking about another kind of wickedness, and it says, woe to the cheats or defrauders, people who cheat in their commercial dealings and things like this. It ends talking about the day of reckoning and the final accountability. 84 begins also with the hour and accountability and how people would receive the book of their deeds. You see, 84 ends talking about the reward of the righteous, that the righteous will have unfailing type of reward. 85 begins talking about the suffering of those righteous here. That is, they will get an ample reward in the day of judgment, regardless of what kind of suffering they have gone through during this life. And it describes a group of believers who were, you know, tortured and killed by their unbelieving persecutors. Chapter 85 ends talking about the glorious Quran, as it is Quran al-Majid, and that it is well guarded and protected. All right? 86 begins with talking about the star with piercing brightness. Star with piercing brightness. The connection might not be as obvious, but since the emphasis in the previous chapter was on the importance, truthfulness, and protection of that truth of the Quran, when you talk about the piercing brightness, as if the Quran itself is a star with piercing brightness that only the blind can reject its truthfulness or divine revelation. This is one way of looking at it. Okay? It ends dealing with the direction to the Prophet, فَنَهِّ لِلْكَافِرِينَ, let those believers alone. That is, if there is no use, all right, leave them alone. The next chapter, 87, begins also with an address to the Prophet. You see the point? The last verse addressing the Prophet in 86, the first one in 87 addresses the Prophet and says, سَبِّحْ اسْمَ رَبِّكَ الْأَعْلَى, glorify the name of your Lord. That's all right. If there is no use, leave them, but continue to glorify the name of your Lord. It ends, that's 87, describing the penalty and reward for believers and unbelievers versus unbelievers, which connects with the beginning of chapter 88, Al-Ghashiyah, because it deals also with the reward and penalty of believers versus unbelievers, as if it's again a continuation of the same subject. 88 ends calling the unbelievers to accountability, that إن علينا حسابهم, God will hold them accountable. The beginning of 89 begins with the reckoning in this life here and describes how God punished the people of Ad, for example. Okay? It ends dealing with the evil ones and good ones in the day of judgment and how again some people will go to paradise, others will go to the hellfire. 90 begins with human struggle. That is, every human being is created with the notion of struggling or striving for some purpose or some cause, whether it's worthwhile or not. And it ends again with a sort of comparison between believers and unbelievers. I don't know how much time we have, if we have time for a few more chapters.
Well, I don't see any single, yeah. I think we have time for a few more chapters, so maybe I'll ask you to continue and okay. Take advantage of every minute here.
Okay. The chapter 91 begins also with comparison, like the previous one ends, mm-hmm. between believers and unbelievers, indicating again after the swearing beginning verses of the chapter, again how people who take care of their souls and purify it are saved, whether and those who are neglecting it or, you know, committing evil and wickedness are destroying their own souls or their own future. It ends talking about the penalty here by again describing the destruction of previous people who disobeyed their prophets. 92 begins to show that human beings have diverse pursuits, إِنَّ سَعْيَكُمْ لَشَتَّى, which shows again that this penalty in the hereafter is dependent also on what kind of pursuit do we have in this life. And finally it ends with showing again that the good will be rewarded, وَلَسَوْفَ يَرْضَى, which very much connects with the beginning of the following chapter, talking about the reward given to Prophet Muhammad, نَوَ الدَّعَكَ رَبُّكَ وَمَا قَلَى, that is, as a result of your sincerity and steadfastness, God will give you until you are well pleased.
Okay. I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm sorry. I do get a single now, and we have another time. Thank you very much for joining us here in Islam in Focus, and hope to see you next week from all of us here. As-salamu alaykum.